Hi, I'm Kyle Barton on this 395th episode of the MWA podcast. Mark Hitt, Sean Wisniewski, and myself are asking Evan Court the five questions. And if you want to hear more about Evan, be sure to check out his interview on episode 394. So welcome back to the show, Evan.
Thank you guys for having me back to be here.
For sure.
Fantastic. Well, before we get started on the five questions, do we have a Patreon shout out?
We do. We have, first we want to say thank you to all of our Patreon supporters, but today we're singling out Blake Laurie. I was just visiting Blake and his shop down in Waco a few weeks ago, and it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's a nice place down there. So if you would like to be like Blake and support our podcast, you can go to patreon.com/MWA podcast and give us some of your support.
Yes, and check out some of his recent posts where he demos the BB Custom Tools stiletto drill bit. Anyway, enough of that.
On to the five questions, Kyle.
On to the five questions.
Okay.
I got to get those plugs in wherever I can.
Yeah, you do.
Well, you'll also notice some Plate 11 shave horses in the backgrounds of the video. No, he's got a stable of those things down there while we're plugging.
That's nice.
Fantastic.
Okay, Evan, this episode's all about you, as you can tell. So in the last episode, you told us kind of how you got into being a professional woodworker, but how did you originally get into
woodworking? It's fairly similar answer. I mean, this is what I've done pretty much my entire life as a practice or like as a career pursuit. I started, my first jobs were just like carpentry jobs, working as a laborer. I wasn't very good as a carpenter, still really am not good as a carpenter. I don't like heights very much. I don't like working outside when it's raining. I'm not a very fast framer, so I kind of figured that out maybe even without realizing it. I got more interested in the finish aspect of carpentry, so things like interior trim. But still didn't totally love working in the field. Finnish carpenters deal with way different problems than cabinet makers deal with in the shop. So then one of the jobs I had, I got to work in the shop a little bit for the first time, and that really resonated with me. And then from that point, I started saving up. I was probably like 15 or 16 at this point, and started, like, I got a chop saw and like a router at Home Depot and just like made ridiculous clunky things in my parents' basement. They were no good, made a big mess, but it got me into it, and I never lost interest for that. And then I think as I got older and started getting more interested, I started getting more exposed to things like fine art and sculpture. I realized the possibilities that woodworking could be, and then ultimately realized I needed to get more serious about that. So then I ended up pursuing North Bennett Street School and then pursuing art school after that, and it just stuck. So I don't think there was a specific turning point that got me into woodworking. I think it was a collection of small experiences that kind of ended up putting me there.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't grow up in your area, but had gone through the rough framing and finish, progression, totally recognize like that, sure. that kind of feel. And you just had access to something like the North Bennett Street School, which I did not, which kind of lets you kind of continue that path. And it's fine. We all take our different directions, but it's super cool. I mean, you organically grew, and it's kind of cool, like from what you were exposed to as a child and then didn't know it, but you were developing it while you were maybe not as interested.
Right.
And then you kind of pushed and pushed and pushed. I mean, it's really cool.
And I think even the experience, even though I am not a framing carpenter right now, I think having those experiences, even at an age when I was retaining the stuff, but in a different way. I mean, I'll remember things now about framing practice that benefit me, like when I'm doing built-in work or when I do have to install cabinetry or something.
Right.
So it all ends up going back to those original experiences in some way, shape, or form. It's all helpful. You just have to kind of figure out how to use it and how to let that experience work for you.
For sure. For sure. So, I mean, it's very much a jack of the all trades kind of thing where like you have that foundation of rough work, but then you have the knowledge of the refined work and how those two play together.
Totally.
And it's like not every framer understands what the finished carpenter is going to do, but once you do both, you really do, and so you'll frame different because of how that, and then that just kind of builds and builds and builds. So yeah, like when you get to a built-in, you're like, well, you know, what do the studs look like behind what I'm doing?
Exactly. Totally. Yeah.
Because that matters.
Is there blocking? Yeah. Is there this?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So have you ever done a kitchen?
I've done two kitchens, actually. I don't mind doing it. It's fast work.
That was my next question.
that's what I consider. I always call that busy work. I mean, even the project I'm just wrapping up now is built in, honestly, made in a similar way to how you'd make a kitchen. It's got pre-finished plywood boxes. Everything's pocket screwed together. There's some edge banding, some face frame action. You got to leave room for scribe and so forth. And that stuff, I don't necessarily want to do that type of work for the rest of my life. But I mean, at this point, it's easy to kind of fit it in every now and then. It pays well. It's pretty quick to do. The tooling you need is honestly pretty minimal most of the time. So I mean, even if anyone starting out asked me like about taking on that type of work, I would say if you can stand it and tolerate it for as long as you can, it's worth it because you can make deep money at it.
Yeah, you can do it out of the bed of your pickup truck if you
totally. There's a couple people I'm good friends with, and they do a lot of the work on site because they have really good job site setups, and it's easier for them to do that, and it's probably faster, honestly, because they're able to deal with some of the problems that arise quicker. But at this point, I'm not afraid of that type of work. I don't want to do it. I don't want every job to be a kitchen or a built-in, but 4 times a year or so, I'm totally done with that. It's fine.
Yeah, that reminds me. I just saw a video on Festool's new track saw. And not that they made a lot of improvements to it, but they did. It actually cuts with some new blades and some new geometry that they have on the on it, but it actually cuts twice as faster, and they demo it saying, here's our latest version. And to cut through it's a inch oak board, it took like 20 seconds.
Wow, that's impressive.
In this new version, it took like 10 seconds, and it was like the same quality of cut.
That's what I like to see.
It's not a bigger saw. It's just a redesigned saw.
Redesigned saw.
It's gotta be faster.
Like I said, mine is from 2000. The track saw I have is from like 2009 or so, and I don't use it enough to do that. But if that is something I did every day, I would be like saying, yeah, I need to do that upgrade to get the newest one.
I see that with one post frame carpenter I follow on Instagram, and he does drill comparisons because they're driving these GRX screws that are like 8 inches long. And it really saves you time if this thing can drive it faster, more and whatever. And, it's not so much the quality of the drilling, it's drilling, whatever. It's a hammer drill. But certain advancements we're making in technology, it's like, oh, no, that really does make a difference. Side to side, you can tell.
How often do you have to change the battery? How long do the batteries last?
Exactly.
Place the battery.
I'm from a school more than a decade ago where it was like, you could drop this drill off a ladder and it'll survive, but it can really only last for like 100 screws. I mean, that's great if you're a certain level of user, but if you're like, drilling off or screwing off, a whole, metal roof or there's lots of applications where it's like, that's not enough. You're going to, you're going to need to do this. Thankfully that is advanced over time. And we're seeing that, something like And it's good. It's good for even Festool, which is known to be a quality brand, but I mean, they're showing that their advancement is not just a new skin on a model. It has actual implications
Oh no!
This will do the same job faster. This will do this, and it's awesome. And that's something I struggled with when I first learned about Festool, because it was after I was done doing rough carpentry, and we didn't use Festool. But like that, you saw those tools, and they were like, "Holy crap, they're expensive compared." But do they do it better? Do they do it cleaner? Do they do it faster? There's all these little metrics that you can kind of look at and go, "Oh no, that makes it." Huge difference.
Yeah, if you're a trim carpenter and you're working, especially in house, especially doing restoration work, it makes total sense.
I mean, speed and dust collection and clean cuts and I mean all of it.
Yeah. So with that said, so Evan, so what's your favorite tool?
This is a simple answer. I have a lot of hand tools, but consistently for years now, Lee Nielsen 4.5 has been my absolute favorite tool.
Hell yes.
I have a pre-war Norris number 4 equivalent infill plane, and that's a wonderful plane. Mm-hmm. The Lee Nielsen 4.5 is better than that plane. I don't care what anyone says. It's heavier. It's easier to push. It's smoother. It's nice to look at. I use it constantly. Somebody asked me one time, they're like, if you had to take one tool on an island and make furniture, what would you take? It would be that tool.
There you go.
Wow.
That's it. Good weight.
Not a saw, huh?
Oh, well.
I can take the iron out and move it back and forth. Really
oh, that's
fast
right.
And work.
That's right.
It's a chisel built in. You just got to take it out.
Yeah.
That's true.
Can you bring stones, sharpening stones?
I can find them on the island.
I'll find the smoothest ones.
I'll rub them together and create sharpening stones. There's water there because it is an island by nature.
So it's an island in a lake in the state of Arkansas with stone.
With stone. That's a Roy Underhill something or other, you know, along the way. Like, you know, every blade started as a chisel. And a saw is a stack of chisels, and a plane is a moving chisel. And, you know, you break it down to the first, and it's like, oh, yeah, I can do this. This one blade does a whole lot. You know, just take it out of what it's riding in and do a heck of a lot more.
Hand planes are
So one, you like the 4.5 better than the 4. The 4 is always something that people aspire to. I actually like my number 3, but anyway.
The 4 is honestly the 4 from them is probably the same quality and good use as the 4.5. I have cumbersome hands, so the 4.5 I have an easier time holding it and pushing it. Just feels more. It's not anything to do with the actual like the size of the 4.5 doesn't make it cut better to me. I just have an easier time holding it.
The blade is what like a quarter inch wider. Bigger than the 4.
Yeah, it's a little bit wider, and I think the sole is about equal amount longer. So, like, if anyone listening to this is like, oh, I'm going to go check that out. If you have smaller hands, maybe find someone who has a 4 and try it. I don't think the 4.5 is better than the 4 or even the 3. It's just based on sort of my body mechanics and how I hold it. But no, hand planes are the most fun tool to me. Hand planes first, chisel second, saws. I need them to be good and I appreciate them, but they don't get me excited. Hand planes, it's like you're working the material in a way, especially like if you're smoothing to get like road dirt at the end of a project or mill marks off, there's something that's kind of romantic in a way. You're working with the material and refining it at the very end. And I like hand for that reason, the most fun to me for that.
Yeah, they do transform the project.
For sure. So, moving past that, who has influenced you the most in woodworking?
Hands down, absolutely, Lance Patterson, who's a faculty member at North Street School. He, to this day, I remember things while I'm in the shop that he said to me 11 years ago now, and they're meaningful to me sometimes for the first time. I went there when I was very, very young. I was barely even 19 years old. So I think I said this in the previous episode. I was trying to figure out and grow just as a human being while I was also trying to go through this extremely intense woodworking curriculum. And he was very patient with me. He let me take on projects that I had no business taking on as a student and was still encouraging through all that. And just his philosophy about the work. He treats woodworking, that's his lifestyle. He's devoted his entire life to that practice, to what woodworking means, to designing furniture from the standpoint of like a historical sense. Like he's incredibly knowledgeable about period work and has figured out a way to create a voice in his own work by using those designs as a starting point. The way he worked in the shop was very meaningful to me. He's simple with it. The jigs he makes are extremely effective and hyper accurate, but they're not overbuilt. He did what he would have to do in order to get himself to the point to make the furniture. And not to say there's anything wrong with people who are invested in jig making. That's a very respectable, worthwhile pursuit. But the things that I was trying to get out of woodworking and still am trying to get out of woodworking, his way in the shop and the way he thinks about it and looks at it and respects it it has always been incredibly meaningful to me. I have a picture of him and I in my studio space, and I have since every studio I've had. And I joke, like, whenever I'm about to do something complicated or something I think is stupid, I just kind of look at that and I'm like, would Lance give me that look right now? That I
what would Lance do
about it more? And usually I end up not doing that thing because he probably would have given me that look. So definitely him.
I think you need to call Lance and ask him to take a picture of himself with that look.
With that,
put that up.
Yes,
you know, he probably would know what I mean by that look, and he'd probably say, "I don't know what you're talking about." But,
that look
wasn't negative.
Cool.
I knew every time I got, I felt like I got what I describe as that look. Him, that was out of sincerity and compassion. Just trying. He knew what I wanted to get out of this and where I wanted to get, and he trying his absolute best to make sure that I got to that place, because I honestly, I think he wants the same thing for himself. I don't think he would ever tell you that he's achieved greatness or that he's peaked in his woodworking career. I think to this day, I mean, I talked to him recently and he said to me that he was very busy. And even that's inspiring to me. I want to be very busy when I'm older and have been doing this for long. I don't ever want to feel like I've accomplished what I set out to accomplish, because what's the point after that? And I think that's something that the way he looks at it, and that's very meaningful to me.
All right.
Exactly.
So what has been your biggest stumbling block?
I would say it's probably knowing when to put the tools down towards the end of a project and not letting myself get in my own way. I think if you guys had asked me that question 10 or 12 years ago, I would have said that it was patience and slowing down. But I think as I learned to conquer that and became a more patient woodworker and took more time to do the things I knew that needed more time, I think I probably overcompensated that. And I definitely still get in my own way, and I obsess over things because I have a standard that I'm trying to reach. And I definitely sometimes I end up harming things and making mistakes because I'm trying to pick at projects. And I need to remind myself that you need to stop at a point that's beautiful, because there is no point that's perfect. There is no perfect. You can't get there. You should have the idea of perfection in mind, because that sets a high standard for yourself if you're serious about this. But you need to be honest and real with yourself and know that beautiful is basically the highest tier you can get to. There is no getting to perfection. And I constantly have to fight with myself about that, to know, okay, I need to put the tools down. This is fine. This is beautiful. I can move on. And that's a constant challenge.
Yeah, that is so true. That is so true. I run into that all the time. My biggest stumbling block is ingrained maple.
That's a hard one, though. That's a hard one. That shows.
I mean, it's like I do all the sanding, I do everything, and then I finish it, and it's like, oh, I can see a scratch there. All right, well, let's redo this thing one more time, you know.
There's a workbench I made on commission for a violin maker earlier year, and that was like the tail vise on that is exactly what you're saying. It was like 4 inches by 8 inches of maple end grain laminated. And I definitely, like, I have gray hairs that I didn't have before from trying to get like sanding marks out of that end grain. That is miserable. I respect that answer.
Yeah. It's like, why did I decide to make all my jigs out of maple? Damn it.
Because it's hard. Because
it was the right choice, Kyle.
Yeah. It's the right choice.
It was the right choice. Yeah. Yeah.
The right choice is usually the hard one.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it is. And that's where it goes to. I look at this and go, well, do you think a customer would see that? And, you know, and then I go, well, I see it.
Exactly. If you have to ask, and that makes you know the answer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what it comes down to. If I have to ask myself that question, that means I need to sand it back and reshoot it. Yeah. So anyway,
so last question. So how has the internet influenced?
I guess I have two answers for that. A broader answer is I think it's so easy to be able to look up other work, or look up, inspiration for design. So I think from a research standpoint, I think the internet is, it's indispensable at this point. I don't know that I could design work, or research it without the use of the internet. And that's I'm showing my age by saying that probably, but, More specifically, I think Instagram has been wonderful for me because, especially in the last 2 years since moving to Texas, I mean, the shops that I was in New England, especially the last shop I was in Portsmouth, there were probably 15 other woodworkers in there who were full time. So I was surrounded by people that I could take inspiration from, go ask advice for, or even honestly just complain with about how difficult woodworking is sometimes. So moving to Texas, I don't have that community physically in front of me. So it's been wonderful. Like I keep up now, like in the last episode, we mentioned Evan Birding and Meredith Hart. I talk to them frequently and it's nice to still keep in touch with people that I was classmates with and see what we're doing. One person who's a huge inspiration to me on there is Ryan Johnson. He goes by RL_Johnson. I've never even met him in person. But we talk constantly, we share ideas with each other and exchange things. And it's from a community standpoint, it's very inspiring to me. Like, especially like with somebody like Ryan or Evan Birding and Meredith, we're not in competition with each other. We're friendly peers, but at the same time, I'll go on and see like, oh, so-and-so did this. I need to get back. Like it inspires me to want to get in the shop and get back to work in a healthy, positive way. And there's many, many others. The list I could go on for a whole podcast episode about who on Instagram inspires me, but definitely that reason is just if it's a day that I'm feeling down in the shop or I'm discouraged about my own work for my own reasons, it's nice to kind of be able to talk to people and kind of get that fire back and I need it and just see what other people are doing and that exchange of ideas. That's you can't trade that for anything.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so with that, Evan, so where can folks find you on the interwebs?
They can find me exclusively on Instagram at court.evan, CourtEvan.
And Mark, what about yourself?
You can find me at plate11.com or jointeffort.net. Kyle?
And you can always find me on Instagram at barton.kyle or at BB Custom Tools, and on YouTube under BB Custom Tools or myself, Kyle Barton. Sean, what about yourself?
What? I'm really simple. I'm at SeanW78 on most social medias.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.